You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Hello, friends. In this episode, I'm going to introduce you to Laura Nelson. And Laura and I talk about her journey of choosing to stop drinking alcohol and the transformative impacts it had on her life. This is actually a genre of change stories that I am lucky enough to get to talk to people about fairly often. And what fascinates me about this is that even though the genre is the same, each of these stories truly is individually a little bit different. Along the way, we explore a few unexpected topics, like the perils of driving over a bridge in a convertible. Yes. And even the hilarity of cross-stitching with teenagers around in your life as part of a quest to rediscover one's personal identity. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Laura Nelson, welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting.
I am so excited to be here. Thank you very much.
Yay. Are you ready for a fun chat?
I am. Let's do it.
Let's do it. I begin every interview by asking people where on the blue marble they call home. So where do you call home?
Well, I call home San Diego, but specifically Coronado, California. Mm. So the little island across the bridge in San Diego.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit jealous. Once upon a time, I ran the rock and roll marathon in San Diego right there. And we were driving over the bridge to Coronado, which has a very low sidewall. And we were in a low convertible with like the top down and the windows down. And it was one of those moments where I was like, I know there's no actual risk of me being plucked out of this car and flung over this bridge. But I was like, I wish I was driving. Like, I need to be driving and we need to be on the inside lane. Like,
yeah, actually, the wall feels very close. I drive across it all the time, but the wall feels really close if you, so I have to look the other way, look at the boats, look at the city.
I was like, this feels a little bit, but that is a beautiful place to live. And I am jealous. All right. In a second, we're going to talk about the topic that you have proposed. But first, I want to ask you something totally unrelated, which is about your hobbies. Would you be willing to share with me in the audience a little about you, a hobby, a pastime, a passion project that you have that you enjoy?
Yeah. I mean, I would say I just got a t-shirt there or a sweatshirt that says this, that traveling is my hobby. Like traveling is my therapy. Traveling is my hobby. I love to travel. I'm a speaker, so it works well for what I do for a living, mm-hmm. but my goal is to travel as much of the world as possible. So that's really it's a great way to disconnect. It's a great way to connect with people that you don't in your everyday life. And just see this beautiful, beautiful place we live.
That's spectacular. I love it. All right. So the topic of the day, unrelated to travel and anything else that we talked about, but is choosing to stop drinking alcohol. Would you like to talk about that today?
Yeah, actually, it's not unrelated, shockingly. It's a good segue because I am in the dental industry in my day job, and I am a speaker in the industry, and I've been a speaker for 15 plus years. And, I have two children, raised the kids, did the suburbia life, started a business, grew my business, started the opportunity to speak, started traveling around from conference to conference. And then in 2020 was, well, probably 2015 to 2020, questioning my relationship with alcohol, having the thoughts about going to these conferences or going to events and waking up in the morning and wished I didn't have that one extra glass of wine or I didn't stay up as late as I did. And in 2020, I stopped drinking literally 2 months, a month and a half before the pandemic. So wasn't planning to be stuck at home, but it was a blessing in disguise, I guess. So I stopped drinking and then got back on the road speaking and such after the world opened back up. And now I no longer drink alcohol, but I'm seeing it from a different lens as a speaker going to these conferences and the amount of alcohol around it. So that's really what my topic is and my interest and my passion now is just really trying to talk about this and normalizing sober choices. Cause I don't care that there's alcohol there. I don't care if people are drinking, but I also want people who don't feel like drinking to have options and to feel like it's okay and it's normal. And so that's really kind of what we're here talking about today.
So we will definitely talk about it. Another old timey story of mine. I am a longtime member of a community running and triathlon group, which actually ties into San Diego because that's where triathlon started. So anyway, we would get together with these social events and people would donate things into the cooler, like the common cooler. And at one point I looked over and like everything is all mixed together. And we have people from like 3 years old to 75 years old that are coming, right? And so there's like water and apple juice and wine and like an old bottle. We're all in the same cooler. And I made this really, really controversial leadership decision that I was like, we need to have two coolers. One that has grown-up drinks and one that has drinks that three-year-olds can get into, right? And it was the three-year-old that like motivated my making this like super controversial decision, which is only controversial because nobody wants to move more coolers than they have to, right? The coolers are heavy. That's the only but after I did it, several people came up to me and said how much more comfortable it made them that to go get their diet soda or their Sprite, or even that it meant that we were making sure that there was something in that cooler, made them feel more comfortable in a social situation. I was like, oh, I'm so glad I did this for you, even though I wasn't thinking about you at all when I made this decision. But anyway, that is a story of giving people choices. Giving people choices, even though it's unintentional. All right. So I'm going to walk it back. I'm going to walk back the cat and walk you through the making of this decision, this personal side of the story, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, for sure. So, like I said,
Well, let me back you up. Let me back you way up. Way up. How old were you, or how long ago was it, when you had your first drink? Like, when did you start drinking alcohol?
I started drinking. I grew up in the military, so my dad was in the army. So I spent 6 years in Germany, and 3 years were 8th, 9th, and 10th grade. And alcohol there, I mean, they sell beer at McDonald's. So, I probably started drinking casually in like 8th, 9th, 10th grade with the peer pressure and I tried the cigarette and all the cool kids are outside, all of that stuff. Just normal. I mean, normal. That sounds bad, right? But
But
like,
that was your experience. That was the experience you had, like, because everybody around you, it felt like everybody around you was doing the same thing. So, like, we'll normalize that by saying that normal is a moving target. It's whatever's happening around you.
Exactly. And honestly, if I really were to look back, and I haven't talked about this actually ever, so I'm glad that we're talking about it here. Alcohol and the beer in Europe is not the same level of alcohol as in the United States. So a beer over there is kind of like a water with a little bit of, alcohol in it versus coming back to the States. Now I'm in college and now we're talking like, higher level, ABV beer, and now we're talking about liquor, and now we're talking about wine, and I'm in college and I'm doing the college thing. Which you mentioned the cooler, it made me think. I thought you were going to say there used to be a thing where, like, we would have a sorority or fraternity party, and there'd be a trash can, and everybody would just pour. There was a lined trash can, pour whatever bottles of alcohol they had in. I think they called it jungle juice or something.
Oh my
And like,
gosh.
you literally drank this like leftover,
That is so
alcohol.
gross.
It's so gross,
That is
right?
so gross.
When you only had $5 left in your thing and you were going out, you'd get like Boone's Farm wine or, so it was
Yes, that I
college.
remember.
It
Where
was
did you go to
college.
college?
Eastern Michigan University.
I have a kid in college in Michigan. Now they take like an empty gallon jug, like a milk jug. I mean, I don't know any, like my kid does not drink milk, so I don't know where this jug comes from, to tell you the truth. Like, I don't know how it gets emptied. And they put in like a spirit and then like Gatorade or like, some sort of colored thing. And it has a name that I've totally forgotten, but it's like this, like, it looks like Kool-Aid, but it's not. It's just like flavored, and they carry around these gallon jars. It's a terrible decision from start to finish, from start to finish. But it might be one step up from the garbage can collection of everybody's leftover booze,
Hey,
which is maybe the most disgusting thing I've ever heard in my life. We did not do
well.
that when I went to school.
I have to tell you, it's so funny how things have changed because my stepdaughter, we were talking about sororities. She joined a sorority a couple of years ago. And back in the day when I joined a sorority, you got hazed. Like,
Okay.
and now they like give each other stuffed animals and
That's the way it was when I went
yeah,
through.
so it's very different time frame, right? I'm talking long time ago college. So
I
yeah.
think it also depends on the culture of the school and things
For
like that. I
sure.
mean, so, but Yeah, it depends on where you go in the culture of where you are. But my experience was very much, here's your present, and here's our, we're gonna have a scavenger hunt, and then we're gonna have a sleepover. And
Yeah.
but
We
I've
had a
heard.
beer hunt in my sorority, actually. Now that you, we had to go to a scavenger hunt, but everywhere we went, we had to drink a beer. And
Yeah.
it was like warm, gross beer. I don't even know what it was. But yeah. So now you look back and you're like, why did you have an issue with alcohol in your, later life? Well, I started really, full-fledged in college. So, but I did
As yeah.
graduate.
So the all right, so you started when you were in Germany. I did not know that about the difference between German beers. And actually, if you had asked me to guess on that, I would have gone the other way. I would have said I think German beers would be stronger, but it makes sense because they have those giant
Like the
glass, the big glasses,
Yeah.
which are so much fun.
I still think they still limit it, and that's part of the reason why craft beers haven't had such a big explosion over there, because the government limits, like literally our beers now are the same, the percentage is the same as like spirits. Like they're so high in alcohol content. And I think it's more limiting in Europe. Don't quote me on this. This is not my forte, but
Right.
I think that's one of the challenges for a lot of the craft beers of going into places like Europe, is that there's too
Yeah.
much control around that.
I believe it. All right. So this was a culture, I think, like when you were young and then in college. What were you talked about this a little bit, but now let's go a little deeper into this. What were the things going on in your life that were leading you to question what was happening in your life and
Sure.
thinking about cutting it out?
Yeah, so then, I got married. I had kids. We opened, my ex and I opened two different businesses. So we had the stress of being new business owners and young children at home. I was doing the mommy wine culture, like, play dates and have wine or brunch and mimosas and just, traveling to events and getting to go to the wine, the invite only wine dinners with my, husband's events or my events. And so we were just doing the, I say suburbia life, but, raising the children and growing our businesses. And multiple times, throughout that time, I would want to do like a 30-day challenge,
Okay.
just to not drink for like 30 days, just because I'm like, okay, I just want to make sure this is not the main part of my life. And, I don't know that I ever made it 30 days. I'd probably make it 28 days or 21 days. And then I'd feel great. And then I'm like, okay, cool. Then I guess we're good. And then I'd go back to societal pressure, societal norms. And then, like around 2015, 2016, my ex and I separated.
Very
My kids
stressful.
are out, and my kids, big impactful part of your life. My kids are now almost grown and out of the house. And I'm going through the biggest challenge of my life. And my best friends started to becoming mimosas in the morning, beers at lunch, wine in the dinner, or wine at dinner, and beers at night. And the thing was, is I didn't have any checks and balances because I was alone. So I could, get up in the morning and then I'd go meet a girlfriend and we'd have a couple drinks and then I would go to dinner or whatever. I started traveling with work. I was probably, bearing my issues into the bottles. But at the events, the business events, everyone was drinking. You walk into the hotel and they're at the bar and they're like, come on over. And so it was during that time when I really spending a lot of time alone, reassessing my life, going, what do I want to do for the next 50 years? Like, who do I want to be when I grow up? Here I am all alone, empty nester. And what's my plan? And that's
Yeah.
really when my subconscious started, going, playing in my head of like, is this the way we're going? Is this a trajectory? And that's really when I started assessing my
So I
relationship.
think it's interesting, though, that even before that, you were called to the challenges, that there was enough going on in your life that when somebody, because, when somebody proposes, hey, do you want to do Dry January? You can always be like, no, like that, you don't have to do it. So it was maybe somewhere in the back of your mind that there were questions about whether or not it was the best
And
choice.
I think one of the ahas I've had since I've been on this journey now, and thing I didn't know is I always thought you were an alcoholic or you weren't. Like my dad, when I growing up, my dad was always like, be careful, we have alcoholism in our family. There, we have, but nobody in my life was sober. Like everybody drank still. So I felt like it was an internal thing. Like, I have to have control over this. Like, I need, ooh, look at that.
Look at
I
that.
need
Zoom is very excited about whatever you
yeah,
were
there's
doing. The fireworks
fireworks.
went off for everybody who's watching this on video. Like the fireworks like erupted behind her, talking about her dad, like talking about the family
Yeah.
genetics. Yeah.
So for me, it was like I thought I was or I wasn't. And what I've learned is alcohol use disorder is a spectrum. And so where I was on the spectrum, and it's a self-diagnosed disease in many times of like where you are, but I didn't realize every time I woke up hungover, like that was my sign. If I regretted drinking, or I woke up hungover, or I was drinking for the wrong reason, this is where the sober curious part is coming out now in our generations of people asking about why do we drink and what are you using alcohol for, and do you don't have to be considered, not that it's bad or good or whatever, but just if that's holding you back from assessing
Yeah,
where
no, I
you
think that's
sit.
valid. Because I
Yeah.
think people do still use that framework. Even I find this very frustrating just from a self-development, self-help, awareness sort of thing. When you run into a framework that has been updated and redefined to help people, and yet there's still people out there pressuring, it's a black and white thing, it is or it isn't, this
For
is,
sure.
this is genetic, this is, and you're like, well, is it or is it not? Like, I mean, I think you got sober during lockdown. I think a lot of us were like, well, there's nothing going on and no place
Yeah.
we have to be and no one's gonna see us, so bring out the PJs and the wine. And and then it was like, and like you were saying, there was nothing, there was no check the next day, like there was no hangover, there was, we weren't late for anything, nobody was watching.
Yep.
So absolutely. Okay, so you're going through major life challenges. Empty nest transition is a very famous life challenge. Ending a relationship, it sounds like you have repartnered, you've got stepkids now, so did you get remarried?
Yep,
Okay.
I'm remarried. Yep.
So what were some of the challenges as you begin to question this and do this self-reflection? What are some of the challenges that you hit upon for yourself?
Yeah, well, so part of it actually you brought up too. You just it's a segue
Yeah.
of so I started dating and I met a guy who I met, multiple guys dating, which by the way, if you're married, try to stay married because dating sucks nowadays, like the apps and the left and the right and swiping and stuff. And I'm like, I can't believe this is what my life has come to.
But and the thing is no one is saying good things about dating, not even the kids. So like it's one thing if you're in a relationship and you have that choice, but for the youngsters who are like, this is the option we've given, I don't know. Like, I don't know if it was any worse, better or worse back in the day, like, partnering up with the people you work with or that you meet in the bar. I don't know. But no one has good things to say about the apps. No one.
Yeah, there's good things and bad things about technology. That's one of the bad ones. But I remember praying of like, I need a solution. This is just, I mean, this is, I'm flying home from events and I don't have anyone there to even know that I'm coming home. My best friend is the wine in first class that is hanging out with me every, or the beer or whatever. It was just getting to a point where I'm like, I'm tired. And I went on a date with a guy who was 15 years sober, who is now my husband. And he got sober with AA. And I remember going on the first date. He didn't care if I drank or not. He was fine. He's very comfortable in his decisions. But I remember going, okay, God, like that's funny. I wanted to get it under control. I didn't want to stop. I don't want to be with somebody who doesn't drink. Like, but he was amazing. And so he became a role model for me. Few other people, as I started talking about, like, I would go a 2 or 3 weeks sober with him, and then I'd go back on the road and I would drink more than I was drinking before on the road at events because this was my outlet time. But I would talk about how it felt good during the time that I wasn't drinking. And people were coming out of the woodwork who were also sober. And I'm like, well, you're sober or you don't drink. And so I started, it's kind of like when you decide you want to buy a yellow Mercedes or pink truck or whatever, you start seeing it, right? And I started seeing like there were so many cool people around me that were sober curious, were sober, didn't drink, whatever, religion, health doesn't matter. That kind of got me paying attention. And then I had an Instagram, somebody came up, it was a sober influencer who came up on my Instagram, and I remember hiding my phone from my husband because I didn't want him to see. I'm like, why am I getting something about sobriety? And here he's sober, but I was hiding it, right? So these were the signs that I was like, okay, if I'm having these questions and these thoughts and these issues, I've got to do something about this. And I got lucky enough. It was one morning I got up and I was not feeling great and I was supposed to speak. And I went to the gym at the hotel and I came across a really great TED talk on gray area drinker. And it was a woman who was very much on the same story that I was having about it's not yes or no, you have it or you don't. It's if you're having all of this debate in your head and these issues in your head, that's what she considered a gray area drinker. And that spoke to me. And that pivot changed everything for me because for me, it didn't, at that point, it was like, I don't care if I am or I'm not or who or what. I'm tired of this battle of trying to decide when to drink, how much to drink, when I shouldn't drink. And it was taking up too much energy in my life. So they came home from that conference and that was the last day I drank.
That was it. So, do you think that there were? Because I was going to ask you if you had everybody. You said everybody in your family drank, and then you go through this awareness where you discover that there are people around you who are sober curious and maybe sober. Do you think that it's what that you just didn't notice that there were sober people around you while you were drinking, or like it's just you just weren't seeing it.
Well, and four, this is part of what I wrote, why I wrote a book about this too, because if you look at the places we go to, not so much personal, because you can choose where you go and who you hang out with, but when you have to go to business events, if you look around, everyone is carrying a glass with a lime on the corner, and and nobody's like they're kind of hiding what's in their cup or not in their cup. So we don't know, we're assuming everybody else is drinking.
Right, but it could just be club soda.
Could be club soda, and then
That's
we
what
put
I do
them.
all the time when I'm in a place when I'm in a place where I'm traveling the next morning or whatever, and people are drinking. I just like I'm like I order like a soda, and I'm like, hey, just put this in a highball for me, you know?
Exactly.
Like,
And
and
so,
the bartender's happy to do it because otherwise people are like, hey, how come you're not drinking? And I'm like, I don't want to have this conversation with you.
this is why I assumed I was the only one. But when I really started looking and hearing these stories, I'm like, there are other people who aren't drinking. So now my goal is to always find other people who are in the room. Not that I want to hang out with them all the time, but I don't feel like I'm the only one anymore. And I think that is
Right.
the big thing, is because when you really, there's already enough shame and stigma and things you have to go through when you get sober. But then being at a space to know you're not alone is just, it's great. It
No,
helps.
there is a, it's a there's a whole lot of socialization that goes into the talk about sobriety, but that same issue shows up in so many other things in like making people feel like they're not pushed out by those choices. So the challenges you had were, creating a safe space for yourself in a social environment and having a support network that you felt was around you. What kind of support did you have when you were going through this? You found this TED talk about gray area drinking, that support. You had your partner who was 15 years sober and like really sounds like he was a rock. What other support did you have as you were going through this process of figuring out for yourself?
Well, I joke around and say I got sober on TikTok
That's
because
different.
where you were geeking out or drinking the wine and whatever, I was on TikTok and I just started following sober influencers, people who were sharing their stories. The first book I read was This Naked Mind by
Right.
Annie. That book changed my, within a couple of days, I changed from I can't drink anymore to I choose not to drink, which was pivotal because she really breaks down why we even have this in our way we grow up and society and all of that. And so my support was really online because, we couldn't go anywhere. We were locked
Yeah.
down. And I just started following and hearing. And then I joke about this, I started my own TikTok channel. And I did it to document my first day, first week, first month, first year for myself so that I would never have to go back and do that again. And I built up quite a good following there. And I did it because nobody in my business life knew I was sober and I needed a place to outlet. I needed a place to share my experience. And so I really kind of got sober on TikTok is sort of the joke that I make
I
about it.
love that. An interview I did earlier today, which you have no way of knowing, and no, it won't be out for weeks and weeks and weeks. But that we also talked about TikTok, and she was making a joke about, you're not supposed to use TikTok this way. This is not what TikTok is for. But and I was saying, I was like, but this is how people are using TikTok. People go and they find things. They, go back to their doctors. They do these things. That book, This Naked Mind, is, I would say, that is definitely the most well-known book, especially for women, because it's written by a woman, for sobriety. And I think it's really interesting because so much of self-help is fueled by women, but the books are always written by men. It's like really, really crazy. But this is one where the leading book is, it's not a new book. Like, it's been around
Well,
for a while.
no. And she put it out as just like online as a draft or something, a blog or something. And just, but she woke up the next day and there were so many people on there that had read it. Actually, she has a, I've now been certified by her
Yeah,
coaching
she has a
program.
program. Yeah.
I don't consider myself a sobriety coach, but I'm a speaker on it. And I wanted to make sure I had all the research because Annie's done like thousands of hours of research to support this. But she has a new book coming out. It's coming out the end of the year. So I'm super stoked about that because she's grown and learned so much since she wrote that years ago. I think it was like 2016 or
Oh, I
something.
would have said, I thought it was, so then I would have thought it was older because I don't know.
Yeah,
I'm
no, I think
assuming.
it's
I believe you.
15, 16, something like that.
Even if you don't get sober after reading that book, it absolutely changes the way you think about putting it in your body.
Completely,
Yeah.
completely. And there are people who read the book who aren't sober, but they're more sober curious and they're more sober-ish based off of the information that she says in the book and she talks
Yeah.
about.
And she really openly shares her story, which is really good. And it's really judgment-free, which is, I think, really important because I think that a lot of people who are going through curiosity about any kind of change in their life, one of the big speed bumps we can run into is when somebody we feel like other people are judging us. Even if it's just going to the gym to lift
Or
weights or
ourselves.
ourselves, right?
That's
Yes.
a lot of it is that we already are judging. I mean, we're the hardest critics on ourselves.
Yeah.
So for me, that's how it was literally, I was beating myself up. Like, how can I have everything else in my world under control, but I have this problem with this alcohol? Like, what? And I was beating myself up. I'm like, I must be broken. I must be wrong. I must be, everybody else has it under control. And then come to find out, not everybody else has it under control either. And I'm not alone, but I was really hard on myself during that time.
I believe it. I'm glad you're on the other side of that. There's a second part to the question about support, which I'll ask you, which is not to judge what you had and what you experienced, but to offer people who are in an earlier stage of a journey, like what they can look for. When you look back over this part of your journey, you can start whenever you want. You can start when you were a kid. You could start, 2 weeks before you got sober. What do you wish, or what, when you look back, do you think would have been helpful for you going through that you maybe did or didn't have?
I would say that opening up and a community makes a big difference. So just talking about to somebody, either somebody, a community, go to a meeting, go online, get connected, getting into some sort of like a mastermind or group coach group co coaching or just listening, right? But just being open to the fact that you potentially want to change something in your life, just to be open to it and then connecting to others. Because whatever your issue is, it doesn't matter if it's addiction, it doesn't matter if it's depression, it doesn't matter if it's loss, whatever it is, somebody else has gone through it.
Yeah.
Somebody else has walked in your shoes. Somebody's on the other side of it. And I kind of wish I would have been more open and less black or white, less I have it or I don't, but more like, I'm having these challenges. I'm having these thoughts because now I have so many people I can call and talk to around this subject and other subjects that I just wish I would have gotten sober sooner, probably, or I've not had so many hours and hours and hours hiding it and, dealing with it internally when I
And
really
like
could
just the
have.
rumination, like why, like in the self-doubt. I think it's really interesting because I think that we get that advice in two different places. And one of the ways it feels like it's really uplifting, it's like, hey, you are the combination of the five people you surround yourself with, right? Like that's like business networking marketing. It's like go find the people you want to be like and level up, right? And it's like, all right, get out there, find those things. But then when it comes to like changing a habit that you are surrounding yourself with self-judgment, right? Internally, or you feel is projected from outside, and it's like, go find people who are doing the thing you want to do. It's like, well, I don't want to go to the gym. They're gonna laugh at me, or I don't want to go to this support group because I'm scared, they're gonna judge me. And it's actually very much the same advice. It's very much the same advice. if you want to do this thing, it's a lot easier if you surround yourself with other people who are two steps forward.
I think too, the second book I read, I didn't realize this. I didn't do it on purpose. I just happened to. It was after the New Year. I got a book sent to me by my financial advisor, of all people, and it was Atomic Habits. And
Okay.
so I read that right after this Naked Mind. And I was like, okay, baby steps, the trajectory of your, you know. So I think that too was just opening my eyes to, like, you know, there's other ways to look at this, other ways to do this. And here's
It
how to.
is, yeah, it is the Atomic Mind is such a helpful book because he breaks it down and makes it seem like habit change is very, very granular and very, very easy. And it's like, I'm just gonna stack these habits. And then you get into it and you're like, you know, I still want to do the thing that I'm trying to break the habit. It's not actually as easy as I was hoping it was gonna be. It's like, oh, okay, this is gonna take a little more work. It is a wonderful book, but I just love that it's like, I do still want the brownie.
Yeah, for sure. For
All
sure. Yep. But being
right.
open and aware to thinking through, that's the biggest thing with Annie's book and the coaching we've
Yeah.
done with the stake in mind is just, I want that drink, right? Like you come home and you're like, I want that. Now, is it the drink that you really want? Yes, there's an addiction and you have to overcome that. But like, or is it just the idea of the relaxing on the couch and a cup of tea could do that for you? Let's
Right.
try it. You know, let's see, right? Be aware, just be curious. That's the first step.
And like when you were telling your story, you've obviously done this work yourself. It sounds that one of the things that you were doing is you were filling a gap of loneliness. Yeah. And so, and that's, I mean, that, you know, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it's life, right? It's
Yeah.
all, but that doesn't mean that has to be the same trajectory that I needed to let the rest of my life go on. And luckily, I had a lot of that time where I was like, I've got this opportunity to redefine myself. I didn't expect myself to be 22 years married and then divorced, right? I didn't expect to be here in life, but I can also redesign my life the way I want to and literally have and did because I was open and curious about it.
So, of the changes that I talk to people about, one of the big ones is ending relationships. Do you know who Esther Perel is, the relationship person? So, I haven't read the article, but it was a quote from her today. Like, she was just quoted as saying that we should tell people that they might want to expect being in two or more marriages in their life. It's not, and I'm fascinated to know what people will respond to. This, because that's a pretty, you know, she anyway, because but it is that it's that adjustment that it's like, I didn't think this was going to happen. Like, I was told this was forever, but you know, forever in 1880 is a little different than forever in 2024.
Well, and I think that we were just talking about too, like empty nesters, it's the same. When we have children, we take on the identity of parenting and all of that. I'm still a parent, but my kids are out of the house now, and you lose your identity. I remember going to
You do.
therapy during that time, and she's like, "Why don't you go home and try to do some things you used to do before you had kids and were married?" And so I was like, "What did I used to do?
Right. So that was
I
25 years
drank."
ago. What was that?
So I'm cross stitching. I'm in my room, sitting in a chair, cross stitching, and my kids come home and they're like, "What are you doing?" And I'm like, "I'm cross stitching." And they're like, "Why?" And I'm like, "I used to do this before I had you guys. I don't know. I'm trying to figure out what I like." You just lose your
You do
identity
lose.
and you
You
have to
do lose.
really kind of go
And they
back.
call it like reawakening and reclaiming. And sometimes I push back on that a little tiny bit because cross stitching you can do, right? You can pick up the same thing, but we don't actually go back to being 22 years old. And so some of those things that we did before we had kids, they don't translate well. They don't translate well to the 50-year-old life. It's like, I don't actually want to do that. So,
Totally. Totally.
but yeah. So, all right. What are two or three ways that your life changed as a result of you embracing this change? It sounds like you've talked about the mindset change and so on. What are some of the other ways that your life changed as a result of this?
It actually changed way beyond what I ever even imagined. Like, so I thought putting down the bottle was the thing. Like, once I put down the alcohol, once I'm not addicted anymore, life will be great. And it was great, and it is great because I don't wake up. I never regret not drinking the night before. I never wake up in the morning and go, "Oh, I wish I had a glass of wine." Like mornings are amazing, and I used to hate mornings, right? But the next thing is that once, and a lot of people find this, once you stop relying on the substance to numb the pain, use for celebration, whatever, then you got to really start doing the internal work on yourself
Yeah.
because you do have to get through the first concert, the first death, the pain, the fight, the this, the that. and learning really about yourself. And again, kind of like you were saying, I had to, you have to go back to who am I? Like, and at 13 when I started drinking, or 14 when I started drinking, and not that I was drinking excessively then, but I wasn't even a developed human yet. I didn't even know who I was. You've got your parents who put you into these are the rules of the family. You've got your peer pressure at school, and life just starts. And so I had this whole like awakening of like, I don't even know what I believe. I don't know what I like. I don't know what I don't like. And that's cool because it's very empowering, because every decision that I make now, I know it's not going to be, it's my decision. It's not going to be because of alcohol. It's not going to be because there was some substance in my body. And there's a lot of stuff I've done where I'm like, yep, not doing that anymore. Didn't like the way that felt. But then there's a lot of stuff where I'm like, I had no idea I was good at this. I had no idea. Like two simple, funny things. Like I will never do karaoke again in my life, ever. The only times I ever did karaoke is when I drank. I don't sing well. You're never going to get me to do karaoke again, right?
Okay, all
But I
right.
actually love dancing. And I forgot, I used to love dancing in college, but then the issue was I didn't want to set down my overpriced drink whenever we were at a bar. And so I would never really go out onto the dance floor because alcohol became more of the priority at the bar versus the
Oh, okay.
thing, right? And
Yeah.
now I can put down my Coke, I don't care, and I can go dance. And so it's things like that where it's just like you and people ask me, because like you said, people ask why you don't drink, and they're like, are you in recovery? Are you an alcoholic? Are you, they'll say these weird things. And I did a video recently about I'm okay to say I'm in recovery or I've recovered because I feel like I've recovered my life. And
That's
in
good.
that regard, I'm like, yeah, I actually do, because I think alcohol took a percentage of my life that I just got back. And the energy that I have not focused on that, I can focus on other things.
I think that's good. I put that question of why aren't you drinking into the box where like asking somebody if they're pregnant is like never. Like I'm never ever ever going to ever ask anybody that question unless, I mean I can't think of a scenario where it would come up, but because it's just like it's just such a strange once, and I probably did ask people that at some point, although I don't remember, but I more remember people pointing out what a strange question it is. You know, like, oh, why aren't you drinking? Because I am thirsty for water. Like, this is water in my hand, like, so,
I
and
had
so.
a guy who I was going to an event. I was with a friend, and he followed my TikTok channel. He knew I was sober, and he came up to us, and we had just gotten to the event, and he's like, "Oh, hey, nice to see you guys. Whatever. Can I get you guys a drink?" Like to me and my friend I was standing by, and then he looked at me and he goes, "Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry." Like somebody had died. And I'm like, no, I would still like a drink. I'm thirsty.
Right,
Like,
exactly. Like
right?
water is a drink, lemonade is a drink,
So I respect the
tea is a
fact that he
drink.
remembered and he was, but it the way he responded, I went right to my hotel room and made a TikTok video about it because I was just like, it was hilarious, but also like I didn't die. I
Right.
still think adult beverage in my mind is just an adult beverage. It's not a Coke or a lemonade. It's something like everybody else is drinking. Just give me one without alcohol. That's the only difference. Who cares what's in my cup, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. 100%, 100%. All right, so in a minute we're going to do the final questions, which my rapid fire questions. One of the questions I sometimes ask people about is karaoke, but I'm not it's not on the list to ask you, but when
Yeah,
you're
I've
talking
got
about
it
it
there. Never doing it. Never doing it.
there's I want to give you a chance to tell people about the good work you do and how can they connect and follow you and find out more.
Awesome. Well, thank you. So in 2023, I was at a conference and I was a speaker on a wellness panel. They asked me to be on the panel because of my sobriety. And it was 125 women in the room. And I happened to ask how many people in here consider themselves sober, sober, curious, and sober-ish. And a quarter of the room raised their hand. But the issue is they all raised their hand sort of hesitantly and looking over their shoulders to see who else was raising their hand. And none of the women knew about each other. And my business partner now was in the room, and she's 20 years sober. And she and I looked at each other. We weren't business partners then, but we both knew we were sober. And we were like, this has to change because we're all walking around with glasses with our lime in it because we don't want to deal with the questions. Yet there's a quarter of the people in here who don't even want to drink. And then the meeting planner came up to me and said, I didn't even realize there was that many people who wanted better options. All I have is beer and wine and water at my house tonight. What should I get? She said, I'll never host a meeting again without considering, because she's such an inclusive person. She was alienating a quarter of the people who didn't want to drink. So that's where Sober Life Rocks started. And Sober Life Rocks, we are here just to honor and support people who are making sober choices. We're in the professional space because a lot of times in your personal space, you can choose what restaurants you go to and bars, but in the professional space, you've got to wine and dine the salespeople. You got to go to the conferences and network at the bar. And so we really want to celebrate people who've made the choice to drink less or not drink in the sober space or in professional space. So Sober Life Rocks, we have the largest community on LinkedIn. So if you search Sober Life Rocks community, you can find us there, join in the message. And then last November, I wrote a book on the inclusive event planner because I do go to conferences on a regular basis, and I feel like the meeting space is completely missing the boat right now.
Yeah.
We're still doing the way we did it in 1960, and we're all standing around the bar in the conference room at night, and networking happens over drinks. And we know that organized events are shrinking, yet the only thing meeting planners know to do is throw more alcohol at it. But there's a percentage of people who aren't even going, or they're going back to their room early at night because of the amount of focus on alcohol. So my book, it's a free download. It's just for event planners, HR meeting planners to just open their eyes to the fact that there's a good percentage of people who would like to have better options and not just around the bar. Give me a better conference where I can network easier and it's not always over happy hour. And the events that you do in the evening are not just focused on alcohol. Let's do something else and include the alcohol. I don't care.
Yeah.
And then let's offer better options at the bar. So that's kind of my
That's a
passion project.
very good point. My
Yeah.
favorite story about this was when I was pregnant, like really, really pregnant, like at a party, really, really pregnant, and I was thirsty and it was a wine bar. So I go to the bar and I say to the bartender, which I have always found the bartenders are like fabulous people, helpful in all situations. And I was like, hey, obviously majorly pregnant, wine is not on the list. What else do you have? And to your point, the reason this came up, he didn't have very much. He's like digging underneath the bar, and he comes up with some juice. And then the only thing he has is these goblets. So I end up with this like wine goblet full of ice and like some red juice, like cranberry juice or whatever it was, and a straw. And walking back to my group with this ridiculous glass with, it would have been a bottle of wine. Right. Like it was like a, and a straw. And I get accosted by this very, very drunk person who's like, you should not be drinking. And I was like, dude, what do you think is
There's a
happening
straw
here?
in
Like,
here.
who's the ice and a straw? Back off. Like, I know. Enjoy your party. But I just, but the part about that resonates with your story is that, even when like people wanted to help, there weren't very many options because of the planning, which helps. Okay, and on that note, three questions just for fun, not about anything that we've talked about. Just try and answer with a couple words, whatever. The first one is super easy. What is your favorite color?
Oh my gosh. I'm going to go purple. I'm a Baltimore Ravens fan.
There you go. Oh, that's interesting since you live in California. All
Yeah.
right, very good. What is something that people do, not anybody specific, but like people in general, just other people that annoys you that you're willing to talk about on the podcast?
Oh geez. Wow, this is good. Oh my, I don't like it when people don't respond back. If you say something, give me an acknowledgement you heard me. Don't just let the conversation end. So I don't know if that's a good one, but
No, I get it too.
I'm like, did you hear me? Can you say
Right.
yes or thank you or okay? Like, I just feel like communication should be two ways.
Right, exactly. Do I need to say it again? Okay, there you go.
Yeah.
All right. So I did not know about the travel when I wrote these questions, but what is a place that you want to visit or see and experience in your lifetime?
Well, I want to go to Australia. That's the plan for January. I'd love to go to like Greenland, Iceland, something like that, and Africa.
So you had
I'd
a
love to do
list ready to
safari.
go. You were
Yes.
ready
I
for
just
that.
got home from Vietnam, which was life-changing, awesome. So yes, I have my next list of things I'd love to do
How long were you in Vietnam?
for 3 weeks. And the cool thing is I
Wow.
got to go with my dad, who served in Vietnam.
Okay.
So he got to go back for the first time since the war. I got to go with him to hear what life was like then and to see how Vietnam has grown and in the country. So it was an amazing trip.
That does sound amazing. That
It
does.
was
What was it
amazing.
like for your dad? Was it like a good
Yeah.
experience for him to see the country when it wasn't at war?
Yeah. So it was really good because you have to think about that. A lot of these men went over when they were like, I mean, he's 17
Young.
years old. He
Yeah.
didn't know what he was just doing what he was told to do. And he was told, here's the enemy and here's what we're doing. And now to see the country, and the country is growing and it's a young country, and to just to see the people, they're beautiful, and the where he was stationed is gorgeous. And so I think it was a good closure for him to see, like, even though it didn't work out and there's all the comfort, he can look back and say, at least the way the country is now, it was a good closure for him, for sure.
I mean, I have no exposure for that, but I can't imagine how jarring it must be. Just, anytime you haven't seen something for a long time, like you go back to your elementary school classroom and you're like, ah, this is not the way I remember it, right? And that's a major, major shift. Like, this was a country that was at war, and you go and visit it now. It's a tourist destination. Like, people are going for like beaches and food and all of those things. That's a major shift.
Yeah, for sure. And I think also it was full. I mean, he's taking his 50-something year old daughter with him, which was not even a thought in his radar then. And just for us to spend, no one else, just he and I for 3 weeks together, which I have never had that with my father, right? So
That's
it's going to be
cool.
one of those things that I'll treasure forever.
Did you eat the crazy street food?
Yes, we
What is
did.
the craziest thing that you ate in Vietnam?
Well, actually, I'm going to just, I didn't eat anything super crazy, but we actually stopped in Korea for 2 days on the way there because he was also stationed there. And I was like, I'll eat kimchi. Like, how bad is kimchi? Like, I like sauerkraut and stuff. Oh my gosh, kimchi is the worst. The worst. There's like variations of it too. There's like
Yeah.
all different. Oh God.
It's like a thing. It's like lasagna, like Italian lasagna. Like, everybody has their own version in their own house. Like, they're really, really proud of it. Like, so it's different wherever you go. So that was
I would say that was the grossest, weirdest thing. I was like, I'm never having a kimchi again. I could at least say I tried it. I tried
you
it.
tried it, but you did not have, because so where I get my nails done, they always have tourism videos, and the street vendors, and every once in a while they have something on there. I'm like, that I would not want it, like where they're chopping up like giant cockroaches or whatever
I
into it.
know.
I'm like, I would not want to know. If I was going to eat that, I could not know.
I used to watch Amazing Race on a regular basis, and I watch those and I'm like, would I do that? Would I do that? I'm not doing that. And food was usually the thing where I was like, yeah, no, I'm not putting a live bug in my mouth or whatever. That's how I would get eliminated from Amazing Race, for sure.
God, that's so good. All right, that's it. Laura Nelson, thank you so much for being an amazing guest on the show today.
Thank you. This was awesome.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself. Head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adultier adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.